Good afternoon, sir, and would you state your name and your ADC number for the record?
My name is Casey Roth, number 110884.
Mr. Roth, you're appearing for the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for your revocation hearing. As you may recall, back on December the 6th, the board held your hearing, and the board found that you were in violation of the terms and conditions of your supervision. That was phase one. And in phase two, we ended up with a tie vote for both the regular vote as well as the counter motion. Each one of them ended up being a tie vote, 2-2 in each one of them. Therefore, we must end up by coming up with a majority vote, and we do have five members present this afternoon. And all five members are present. And just for your information, just as a refresh reminder, the five members are the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse, the Honorable Mr. Louis Kawanis, the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, the Honorable Mr. David Neal. My name is C.T. Wright. I'm serving as your panel chair this time. We also have in the room, as you should be able to see now, that is Mr. Osborne. Mr. Osborne is representing the Department of Corrections as well as your parole officer. We will do a phase two only because we did agree upon phase one the last time. Therefore, we begin phase two by receiving some background information on you from the Department of Corrections. And once we receive that information, then we will talk to you, and then the board will be able to ask you any questions and to discuss this with your sister, who's on the telephone as well as the parole officer, who's also present in the room at this time. Therefore, at this time, we're going to ask Mr. Osborne if he would give us some background information on Mr. Westby. If you would give us some background information, Mr. Westby, on the Mr. Ross at this time, sir.
Yes, sir. On July 19, 2017, Mr. Ross was released from DOC. He was arrested on October 31st, 2017, by electronic monitoring unit staff. There were no new charges. He was back in DOC custody on October 31st, 2017, with a projected CSED of December 19th, 2018, 0 scan days. His current conviction, 2009, sexual contact with a minor, 10 years. Prior convictions, 1995, unlawful use of means of transportation, 1.5 years. Also in 1995, theft, 1.5 years. This is his second term in DOC, CUIR score 3-3, mental health score 2, substance abuse score 2. There's no gang information noted. Prior term of supervision, 1995. Parole release of standard, 17 days, revoked by the BOEC. His disciplinary is moderate, theft noted. Other arrest, 2007, sexual conduct with a minor, Arizona, felony conviction, probation. His community risk score is a G4B5. He is a level 3 sex offender, registerable, notifiable, SBP reviewable, and DCAC is cited in court docs.
Okay, thank you so very much. Okay, sir, let me start over. Not over, but let me also amend it at this time by swearing you, Mr. Westby, as well as your sister, Ms. Ross. I want to swear all of you in. And sir, are you going to speak, sir?
If needed.
Okay, what's your name?
Jan Peretta.
Okay, Mr. Peretta from the parole office. Okay, do all of you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God, or do you so affirm? Mr. Ross?
Yes, sir, I do.
Ms. Ross?
Yes, and Mr. Roth,
R-O-T-H. R-O-T-H, and Mr.
Yes, I will.
And Mr. Westby.
I do.
Thank you so very much. Okay, at this time we will talk to you, and I think some of the conversation that we will have now, we probably discussed it the last time that you were here, but we will start because this is the beginning of phase two at this time. I think that when we were here the last time, we discovered the fact that you did reside at Coppapelle in Mesa, and I think you indicated at that time that you remained there throughout the period when you were on release, sir.
Yes, sir.
And did you have employment at that time, sir?
Yes, sir. I was employed almost within 2 weeks of release.
Okay.
I maintained that employment until the date of my arrest.
And just for the record, where were you employed, sir?
I was working for a company called Service Link Commercial as a maintenance technician for commercial properties.
Okay, sir. And we do take note that you was assigned to a place rather on task, the color of the day. And what's your recollection of that? Note that you had some negatives. Well, all of you was negative while you were on color code, sir.
Yes, sir. My color that I was assigned was gray. Early on, September, I believe it was, I neglected to call in and missed the initial UA. I immediately reported, I was called the next morning by my parole officer, Mr. Vu. He notified me that I missed the UA and that I told him I will go drop one right now. I proceeded to do so at the facility off of I-17 at Indian School. And I missed another one again on the 30th of October, which I have really no excuse for it. I just didn't call it in, I guess.
And then did you submit that one the next day, sir?
Yes, they tested me in the office with a mouth swab, and that one also came up clean.
Okay. So with the exception of those two, and the next day when you took them, they did show up clean. There were no positives during that period. That is correct. Am I correct, sir?
I'd also like to mention that my whole period of incarceration, all the UAs, the randoms that I was given, they were also clean. I have not partaken of any illicit substances since prior to my initial arrest in December of 2008.
Okay, sir. And we commend you on that. That's always a positive, and that you've been clean since you've been incarcerated. Now, I believe that when we talk with you in phase one of the areas that we talked about was the possession of that of the knife, which we do have it present. So would you kind of explain again to the board, I know you did it before, but would you explain again to the board why you had that particular knife and where was it found, and why was it in the vehicle, sir?
The tool in question was a Fisker's compact clearing hook. I had initially purchased it when the chores at the halfway house required me to maintain the backyard. I used it to trim the bases of the trees, the little suckers that keep shooting up. And at some point in time, the manager of the halfway house made it known that, you know, if we were accumulating too many things, that we needed to start taking them out of the house. So at the time of my staffing with Mr. Pareda, all of my tools were in the vehicle. My placement of the tools in the vehicle was not something I consciously considered. I can see the point of where something that may be dangerous within reach of the driver, I can understand that, but that was not something that I had consciously placed there in that vein.
So this was your tool, and it was, and although you explained it the last time, why did you have it in the vehicle that at that time rather than in the toolbox, sir?
I really couldn't say. I probably brought it out from the halfway house, just put it in the car or wherever it was handy, and forgot about it.
And again, where did you, you had it there, so why was it in the vehicle, I guess is what I'm asking. You were doing the, correct me now, that you were doing the, using it there at the halfway house, so why did you put it in the vehicle, sir, when you were leaving?
All of my tools were in the vehicle in case I would ever need them while I was at work. That and the tight strictures on storage space required me to barely keep anything in the halfway house at all. So as soon as I got a vehicle, all of my tools went into the car.
Okay. Okay, so there was not enough room in the, in your room for you to keep the tools, therefore you kept them in the vehicle. Am I correct, sir?
That is correct.
Okay. Okay, at this time, I'm going to yield to other board members. Board members, questions at this time? Any questions, board members?
I have one.
Yes, the
Honorable. Because I was the one who was not in taking part in the hearing the last time. Sir, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
I'm just reviewing the allegation notes, and it said that the Fisker's tool was located in a compact pocket behind the front passenger seat, which is directly in the area of control of the driver while operating the vehicle. So just based on the description, where was it exactly? Like behind the seat in the pocket, or?
I drive a 2004 Dodge Caravan. There is a pocket on the back of the passenger seat, just like a mesh thing, cargo holder.
Yes, sir.
I don't remember it being there, but I'm not going to say that, you know, anyone's spreading any falsehoods. I would think that if I had been a violent person and I had intended something of that nature to be a weapon, I would have kept it in the basket next to my seat, unsheathed and ready to go. But as it, for me, it is simply a tool. I didn't attach any significance to where it was placed in my vehicle. I do know that my socket set was located directly behind the driver's seat, and all the rest of my tools were somewhere behind the rear passenger seat in the minivan.
And again, what did you use this tool for exactly?
I used it for trimming the, I guess they're called suckers, that sprouted from the bases of trees. That's what I used it for, to trim those off to, you know, neaten up the backyard at the halfway house.
Thank you, sir. It's only questions. Thank you.
Any further questions by board members? Board members, as you can see, it's
Rittenhouse.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse.
Yes, sir. In this warrant, there's information when there were those couple of instances where you failed to produce a urine specimen, you had a staffing, and during the staffing,
the second one,
the second one. During the staffing, your PO searched your cell phone, and your phone was found to have numerous download photos. I'm reading this right off of here. Numerous download photos of scantily clad women. And you were redirected, because I think you'd been directed before, not to possess pictures of half-naked women, as these are viewed as possession of sexually stimulating material. So why were those images on your phone?
I don't know that I would have anything reasonable to say against that, other than the fact that after being surrounded by members of my own sex for so many years, that, you know, appreciating the female form may have been prevalent. I was very cautious to make sure that they were not like vulgar or unduly exposed. I believe most of them were primarily screensavers.
Okay. And then the other question I have is, were you the groundskeeper for the facility? Or did they have like somebody to keep the grounds?
At the halfway house, we had a rotating schedule of chores. So depending on from week to week, the chores would be changed from each member of the halfway house. There were 10 of us living in this house at one time. So.
And this is where you used the tool. You mentioned the socket set. No, it's where you were the maintenance person.
Oh, no. I was a maintenance person for my job. I was sent to various properties, most times to clean up properties and prepare them for viewing by prospective tenants that may have come to check the properties and see if they were interested in renting. During the last month, I really had no need for many of my tools. I was the quote-unquote engineer of an office building, changing air filters and light bulbs and things of that nature. But the purpose of that tool was primarily just to use at the halfway house when my responsibilities were the backyard.
Okay, all right, that makes sense. So the other question I have is that there's another paragraph here on this warrant that says that you admitted to contacting your adult son and purchased two state fair tickets for both your older son and minor son and gave those to them to attend the state fair. You reported that you had not had any contact with minors since being redirected not to have contact, and yet you admitted then to having contact with your minor children, saying that you thought because it was on the phone that wasn't contact. You thought it had to be face-to-face contact. So
originally,
yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Originally, when I was first released, I was not aware that phone calls and letters were construed strictly in that vein. I thought that the contact was me being able to like see my son and maybe give him a hug and things of that.
Like physical contact. Physical contact, okay.
Correct.
All right.
When directed by my parole officer that there was to be absolutely zero contact whatsoever, I desisted on phone calls, and the only son I had contact with was my oldest son. On the incident in question that you have brought up about
that's
the fair,
in here, yeah.
My oldest son's birthday was October 3rd. My youngest son's birthday was November 5th. I arranged to purchase those all-day ride passes, and I gave them to my oldest son, so that they could both go in and have a good time for their birthdays. I did not have any continued contact with my youngest son, only my oldest.
What do you mean by continued contact?
From the moment that David Fu directed me that there's to be absolutely zero contact with my youngest son, I didn't talk to him. I let his brother know that, you know, I couldn't talk to him until I got approval through a court or he turned 18. And from that point on, I only spoke with my oldest son.
Okay, all right, thank you. Thank you, sir, and thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so very much, Mr. Rittenhouse. Further questions by board members? Okay, we don't have any further questions at this time. Our board members, they will have an opportunity before we come to the end of this hearing. At this time, would you like to come forward, sir, and provide whatever information that you would like to provide to the board? And first of all, may we ask that you would state your name just for the record, sir?
My name is Dan Peretta. I'm a senior parole officer of Community Corrections, assigned to the electronic monitoring unit.
Thank you so very much, sir. And as you may remember that you are on the oath, and what could you share for the board at this time?
When Mr. Roth was indicating earlier that he was using the tool if I could approach to trim the trees, when we took this item into custody, it's as sold and I put it in an envelope immediately. As you see, it doesn't appear, if I could approach,
yes,
that
sir.
It's been used in any way. It hasn't been.
And would you take it back where you were standing and show that it had not been used back there?
Yeah.
I have the camera on
his
you
camera,
now.
The camera there.
Okay, thank you, sir.
It has not been cleaned by myself. It's been in my custody, and it's been secured by a key, lock and key by myself. When I asked Mr. Roth about this item, he said he was using it as a maintenance gentleman, but not a groundskeeper. Asked him why it wasn't a hacksaw, wasn't purchased instead of sign, because quote unquote it looked cooler. We further went to our criminal investigations unit to get assistance from them, which are certified police officers, to see if this could be considered as a weapon by a prohibited possessor. They indicated they were patrolling the streets, and if Mr. Roth was pulled over because the item itself was in his direct wingspan, he could be charged. But since we were taking him back on this violation alone, they weren't seeking to file charges with the prosecutor. So that's why charges weren't filed by our CIU unit. Furthermore, Mr. Roth indicated that he was never told that form of contacts, be it phone calls or letters, weren't allowed. No, during intake, all offenders are told any form of contact, be it phone, telephonic, letters, any form whatsoever, cannot be allowed. That's when he indicated, when during our staffing, that he was having FaceTime contact with his minor child, and I had to redirect him. I was like, that's still a form of contact, regardless. Either way, it appears that Mr. Roth is trying to divert what we tell him through his conditions, tell him any form of contact with minors. That's all I got to say. Any questions?
Board members' questions. I'm with Mr. Johnson.
So I just had a question because we discussed the other allegations and the statements that was in there, but when the warrant was wrote up, the warrant wasn't wrote up in for his violations of contact with his minor child, or that wasn't one of the violations in the warrant. So I have to assume that at that point in time, you didn't think it was worth it. It was not enough. You were going to give him a chance. You weren't going to violate him on that point.
We took everything in totality at the time. At that point, it appeared that he had a number of violations.
Okay.
That he was not trying to deceive, but construe his conditions. Mm-hmm. And the whole totality, the weapon itself, the valley drop UAs, his GPS, battery violations, but especially the weapon itself, and the contact minors. That's why we took him into custody, not just having contact alone, since the minor is his own child and not a victim.
All right, so my question was that in the warrant itself, the allegation listed on the warrant does not list any of those things.
No, it does not. It puts it in the phase two or the back page, but it does not put it as an allegation in itself.
And on the, if I remember, let's put it to submit the urine specimens. And when he failed to submit the urine specimens, did he test the next day? Did he?
Yes, he did.
And
sir.
Did he test negative or positive?
It was negative, sir.
So he hasn't had any positive?
He provided 4 urine specimens and all tested negative for any illicit substances.
So, and this is just my question, you can just kind of answer this for me, because when we look at let me just speak for myself, when I look at the warrant and I look at the violations that's listed and we read those and we find them in violation, violation of the allegations that are listed on the warrant by the parole officer. So, there's other violations that are listed or are talked about in there. I just have sometimes an issue with understanding why, or either I'm thinking that, okay, you know, those things happen. The parole officer has a great amount of discretion whether to charge him with all the violations or charge him with one violation or two, or the parole officer has the option of not violate him or just giving him a referral or talking to him about it. So
we don't list a lot of allegations because we consider it stacking. we'll list the most significant violations in the warrant or the initial warrant itself. And on the back page, we'll go over all their compliance and their failure to comply with their conditions. But initially, we just list the significant violations. Not all of them. We consider, we call it stacking, quote unquote stacking. It's an unwritten rule that we don't do that as a common practice in community corrections.
So when you say you, and I'm, because I do have a slight issue, when you say you don't stack them, that's so you issue a warrant and you list the allegations that they violated on that warrant. You send those to us as the parole board. We go over those allegations that you list as a parole officer that are the violations. If you don't list those as a violation, you know, then we could be, you know, second guessing, you know, the parole officers, because the parole officer has the option whether you call it stacking or whether you call it giving the person, you know, a break. You may do a counseling session like you have in here, programming. You also have sanctions. Okay, they get programming and sanctions for violations. Maybe they may have did some drugs, or they may have committed a violation, and instead of violating them, you give them a programming or you put them in sanctions. And if they continue to do that, then you violate them after they continue those sanctions. And so what you're saying is that if you don't put it in the warrant, and if they program, if they have a program or they have a sanction that's a violation, then you don't put it on the warrant because you don't want to stack it, although you list it as a sanction or a programming.
No, I apologize. I meant if a violation occurred, say it happened a couple of months ago, then we sanctioned him, we redirected him, had a staffing, sanctioned him to certain items, counseling, be it community service, be it homework. We won't put down a warrant, but if he continues and progresses and fails to comply with those sanctions, then we will go ahead and begin the revocation process. Then we'll go back to those,
right,
and list those on the front page of the warrant while we go ahead and generate the warrant. Then we'll list all the violations he committed or failed to comply with these conditions of supervision on the back page or his summary in the back. If we would list all the violations that are failed or committed while on community supervision, it could be a slew. If we initiate from the day he was released, that's why we progress. We have a sanctions interventions grid for we could help transition the offender.
Right.
Instead of this and everything.
So my other question, had the weapon not been involved with it, would you have still violated him?
Had the weapon? No.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mr. Johnson. Honorable Mr. Kowalis.
I just want to follow up on that, sir. From my own understanding in the greater parole process, if there is something that ends up in sanctions, is that considered not something that you would put in an allegation in the future because it's already been sanctioned?
I apologize.
What I'm saying is, okay, an individual violates a condition, you sanction them. Would you, after sanctioning someone, if they continued to have a series of violations or violate their conditions, would you use something that you already sanctioned as one of the allegations? Does that make sense?
So, let me see if I understand this. Say he provided your specimen,
yes,
positive for methamphetamine.
Yes.
We direct him to go to counseling.
Yes.
Fails to go to counseling, fails to comply, doesn't provide urine specimens as directed because of we sanctioned him from that initial drop in the UA or the initial positive for methamphetamine, absolutely. Because it stemmed from that violation itself, and he just continued to progress and wasn't complying. It showed that he wasn't trying to transition or trying to help himself. And
the other question is, and it's, I don't know if it's really policy or just institutional wisdom, mm-hmm. but what is the problem with stacking? Meaning, it sounds like it's something you're avoiding doing as a parole officer. And I am not trying to back you into a corner. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to understand parole. And that is, what is, it's going to sound kind of like a double negative, but what is the virtue of not stacking? Like why would you not want to stack the allegations?
I don't think I would be comfortable answering that, to be honest. To personally violations, we give an offender a lot of leeway, mm-hmm. trying to assist them, trying to transition them. We're not going to violate them and take them back for 3 strikes, you're out. That old adage, no. You know what I mean? We're not going to try to work with this offender. If not, if he continues down a bad path, of course, we have to put a limitation. We have to follow the guideline, our interventions guideline, and follow that. But stacking, meaning have like 10 violations listed, then for the board members to go through all of them, you know what I mean?
Yes, sir. I guess what I'm getting at is that there's a wisdom in not stacking.
Absolutely.
But I'm not quite sure that the institutional wisdom of it. Do you see what I'm saying? I get that there's a reason for it, and it's not really me scrutinizing you as a parole officer as much as me trying to understand why is, if it's not a written policy, why is an institutional policy stacking a bad thing? Because that's something that I'm unfamiliar with, you know. If it was criminal investigation, on the other hand, mm-hmm. and we had identified 10 counts, we would certainly, like, charge the 10 counts if we could in many cases. In this case, it seems to be something that is, it almost sounds like not against policy, I don't want to say against policy, but something that is frowned upon in terms of helping the individual reintegrate into society or give them the opportunity to succeed in parole. So I'm just trying to understand the parole process.
No, we will address each violation
yes.
accordingly, and we will hold them accountable and responsible for each violation, of course. But listing all of them just in itself for the warrant, I believe, you know what I mean? It'll be a lot of paperwork.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I will ask this direct question, though, and that is the way I'm kind of reading this particular case is that the individual seems to have had a pattern of pushing the boundaries of his conditions. That's the way I'm taking it in.
That's correct.
Okay. I won't ask any further questions, but thank you for being so tolerant.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? I think that we do need to remember that the board has already found
yes, sir.
Him in violation of the 2 allegations listed on the warrant. That has already been determined by the board by a unanimous vote. I believe it was unanimous vote as it relates to that. And right now, we can't go back and redo phase one. That has already been predetermined. But this time, the Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Dr. Wright. Officer Preda, did you give permission for Mr. Roth to have, was it FaceTime that he was communicating? FaceTime?
No, I never gave him permission.
So if he was using FaceTime, I thought I heard someone say he was talking to his children using FaceTime, no?
His minor child. He did verbally admit to me that he was... FaceTime is...
FaceTime is with an iPad.
Yes, or iPhone, or it's an app that you use where you could telephonically speak to another individual and see their face.
And there's a condition, I'm going back to the conditions, and I'm looking at condition H, which is I will not be in possession of any type of smartphone, computer, tablet, device without permission from my assigned parole officer. So I didn't know if you, you gave him permission to have, would it be just on a phone? If he had an iPhone, I guess he could just do communicate using the iPhone, using FaceTime or whatever the software is.
I'm sorry, I apologize for interrupting, but there was not at any time any type of FaceTime between myself and my youngest son.
Wait a minute, you have an opportunity to explain that later, sir. Wait until we can't hear but one person at a time, so wait until we finish, then you can explain that to the board, sir. We'll give you that opportunity, sir.
His crime, he didn't have any electronic or any electronic device restrictions, so he was allowed to possess a device.
So he could have. Okay, because he had signed this condition, and it's not stricken off on under special conditions. It says, I will not be in possession of any blah, 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 which he signed, so without permission of my assigned parole officer. So you gave him permission then.
Well, I was his assigned parole officer. Those officers were both I would think.
Indirectly through, okay. All right. Okay, thank you. That was my main question for Mr.
Thank you so very much. Any further questions? Yes, Mr. Cavallo.
Mr. Neal. Sorry,
Mr.
sir.
Mr. Neal. I'm sorry, Mr. Neal.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I'm hiding over here. First of all, Officer Peretta, I want to tell you that the board's really not trying to back you in the corner or crucify you or anything else like that. There are just a lot of questions have been brought up or, you know, have arisen from this case, and some of the questions we're asking you are actually would include almost every revocation we hear as far as some procedural stuff like this. We're really not trying to hang you out to dry, but I'm sure you've been in court and thought the same thing, like all of us. One problem I have with this case is that we were told to be very, very careful of due process. Okay, and normally in due process, when you're having any kind of an hearing, only, you know, the allegations are to be covered by it, right? And that's one of the points I think Mr. Johnson was trying to make. We have a warrant, two-page warrant. We're supposed to not look beyond those two pages for anything on this than our phase one, which, and I don't have any problem with the fact that we voted unanimously that Mr. Roth had violated the term and conditions of his release based on the two allegations and the explanation of those two allegations. But there's lots more information in your sanctions about all kinds of other kind of violations that you appear to have resolved with him ahead of time. It's like the girly pictures on his phone, I guess, since they were, you know, clad, but scantily clad, it not wouldn't necessarily fall under pornography. But I can understand at that point in time where, you know, you would be more willing to say erase them and don't do it again than if you found a bunch of pornography, especially child pornography, something like that on there. But you did say it's like in the knife is my next issue on this whole thing. I am a tool freak. I would need one to jump in looking for something to trim suckers off trees, that kind of stuff, and be looking for that saw, fold-up saw, and when I see this other tool, I'm going to say, wow, that's cool, I want that one. Partly because I'm going to think of all the other things I can do with it that I can't do with that saw. And I don't give them tools. You can never replace them for the price you get for them if you sell them, or, you know, let's say give them to my kids. So those are some of my issues with it. I understand placement and wingspan and all that, but in my experience in law enforcement, all that was based on the current situation at the time. People would be in traffic accidents all the time, have minor things, and they were shoddy people, whatever, they shouldn't have things, but they had stuff in their vehicle that may or may not have been in their wingspan. If, you know, you stop the guy because the suspect in some kind of an altercation, you're gonna go for all that stuff. If the person may have a record, but he didn't do anything really super wrong and all that, then it's kind of like it's let go. You do that a lot with airline drops and stuff like that, okay, makes violation. show up the next day, you do a swab, or you send them to get a, and they're negative. You know, if they go the next day, they drop and they're positive, then wait a minute, you know. All is not forgiven, I understand that. But I'm having a problem with this one in trying to make my mind wrap around due process when some of the reasons for, you know, in here that we're looking at now in phase two are things that weren't addressed at the warrant. And specifically, and my thought process puts me in the deal that yes, this stuff happened. Yes, you addressed it. And, you know, sanctioning him to counseling or told him to erase the pictures or said, don't do it again with contact with your son, you know, those kind of things, that it was addressed. If those were the repeat things that are on the warrant, you know, then okay, then give more weight to the warrant, but they're not listed. So it's kind of like, he did this, he's not perfect, you know, probie, but we've taken care of those problems. These are the new issues over here. And so it gets back to the knife. You said you wouldn't have violated him if it wasn't for the knife. But I understand your point of view on that, I mean, totally, because yes, a violent prisoner could take that and do major damage. But a pencil is a very dangerous weapon when used properly, too. And I mean, not in what you write, but where you poke the person with it, you know. So anyway, thank you. And we really aren't trying to put you on the spot.
I think that some of the, and I'm just speaking as one individual, but based on my experience with the board, I think that some of the questions that we are beginning to raise now, the questions that perhaps we need to go into a training session in the future if we want to raise those type of questions. I don't think that right now we're just trying to make a determination whether to revoke the community supervision or to continue him on community supervision. That's what we're trying to do now. We're not trying to figure out the process that the Department of Correction must go through. And I think there's a time and place for that. I don't disagree with that. I think that there's a time when we perhaps maybe want to go back through a training program with the department. I think that as part of our orientation, we go through that process, but maybe we do need to go back with some specific questions that we need to answer. And I just wanted to say that. But back to where we are at this particular time, are there any further questions at this time for the officer?
Yes, sir. You make mention of sanctions. Was my being arrested the initial sanction? What are these sanctions, and why was I never placed on it?
It's this page of the warrant.
I understand the infractions and the counseling that I received from my parole officer, but I was never sanctioned to attend any further classes. I was never sanctioned to home arrest.
Who are you directing that to? Do you direct that to the board
to Mr. Perea, sir?
Do you want to comment on that, sir?
Like stated earlier, sir, the arrests occurred because of the significance of this violation, the weapon itself, because it could be possibly a felony per our CIU police officers. They indicated if the offender was pulled over during traffic or normal, there's never a normal traffic stop, that he could possibly be charged with a felony at that point, we believe. You know what I mean? We're not going to go forward any charges, and at that point we took him into custody.
I'd like to point out that a week before my violation, I was pulled over by a police officer and cited for a cracked windshield, and he made no mention of a desire to search my vehicle, or when he did look through the windows, point out of anything of concern to him. He simply wrote me a citation and sent me on my way. This occurred in Scottsdale approximately 7 or 8 days prior to Halloween.
Any response, sir? Do you have a response to that?
Mr. Westby has it.
Mr. Westby wants to respond to it. Mr. Westby, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm looking at the Corona notes here. I don't see anything regarding any police contact that was reported to his parole officer.
I called him immediately upon receiving my citation and let him know at that very moment.
Okay, do you...
And that's not the initial police contact I incurred. Within a month and a half of being released, I was in a company vehicle and was T-boned by another driver. And I had police contact at that point, which I notified my parole officer of as well.
So were you notified of those two contacts with police officers? Is there anything in the Corona notes?
I'm going line through line. Unless I missed it, I'm going to just check again, but I did not see anything that there was. Because generally there will be something out there that will say police contact. It's under the contact code.
You finished, Mr. Westby?
Mr. Ross states that this occurred about 7 days before he was arrested.
Before Halloween.
Or before Halloween.
Was it before Halloween?
And I see an entry here, October 25th, from Officer Vu. It states that the Fed reports no recent police contact. There's no reports of any police contact up through the time that he was arrested.
Thank you, sir. Any further questions for him?
I have no more. Okay. Other than why there were no previous sanctions prior to my arrest. I mean, if that's the normal procedure for violations is to counsel, then sanction, then violate, how come that step was skipped for me? Mr. Pareda.
Do you want to respond to that, sir?
Like I stated, sir, doctor, right? The significance of the violation, if he was in possession of a weapon or of a gun, will we give him sanctions? We would not, sir. The weapon in itself explains a lot why he was taken into custody.
And for the question.
Now we're jumping to an assumption that this tool was a weapon, and it was not.
Do you have anything else you want to add to that, sir? Okay, board members, any further questions for the officer? I see no further questions at this time, sir. Maybe ask just a little later. Okay, we will now go to your supporter on the phone. Ma'am, what do you want to share with the board? Hello? Oh, she was no longer on the phone. Ma'am, we're sorry. We did not know that you were no longer on the phone. We sincerely apologize. And in fact, I was calling on you to see if you wanted to give testimony on behalf of your brother at this time, ma'am.
Well, I missed out on some stuff that was said, so if I repeat anything that was already said, I apologize for that.
Please state your name again just for the record.
My name is Shannon Roth, R-O-T-H.
Thank you so very much. Please go ahead, ma'am.
I just wanted to add that in the time that he was out, I understand that he's made a few mistakes, but I think all of the mistakes that he has made when those have been addressed, he has worked to correct them. this weapon, as they call it. I think for somebody that has only had any tool, any kind of tool or anything, knife or whatnot, if they've only had it a very short period of time and it hasn't had extensive use, there's the possibility that it could look like it has not been used. I know that he's pretty meticulous on the tools that he has and he keeps them in good shape, so I could see it looking as if it hadn't been used for any reason. I think that he deserves a chance to be out and continue to work and continue to better his life. I don't think that spending more time in prison is going to make him a better person or have him add to society and better in another year than what he was doing now. So that was all I wanted to add.
Thank you so very much. At this time, we're going to see if board members might have any questions for you, ma'am. Board members, okay. Any questions? I don't see any questions coming from any board members. Thank you, and please feel free to stay on the phone, and hopefully we won't get disconnected again. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Board members, any further questions for Mr. Ross at this time? Any further questions? Any further questions? I see none. Therefore, sir, we're coming towards the end of your hearing. This is your hearing. We want to give you an opportunity to make a final statement to the board without repeating yourself. The board will now listen to you. Anything else you would like to tell the board, sir? And following this, following your statement, the board will go into discussion at that point, and following that discussion, the board will make its decision at that point. But please go ahead, sir.
Okay, thank you, sir. As to the violations that I'm before you to address and determine whether to reinstate or reinvoke, all I can do is speak on my intentions to be more mindful of my tools and their placement, as well as having text message alerts set up through tasks so that at 6 a.m. I will know right away if I have to submit a sample that day or not. I am eager to return to work. I enjoy my job and am proud to say that after starting work within 2 weeks of my release, I was employed at ServiceLink Commercial doing general commercial maintenance, earning $12 an hour. 5 weeks into my 90-day probationary period, I received a $1 raise to $13 an hour. The week of my violation would have seen me through the end of my probationary period, as well as another raise from $13 to $14 an hour. After all my years of struggling and a lot of living check to check, I was enjoying the feeling of security that a full-time position affords. I also look forward to returning to working towards the accomplishment of my goals. First and foremost is to acquire at least an associate's in business that I have at least 9 credits towards already, as well as reconnecting with family members that I have not had contact with for far too many years. It is also my goal to successfully utilize the good time that I have earned to complete my term of parole in the manner it was intended, re-entering society. There are, of course, hardships out there. Most importantly, showing that I am not a member of any criminal element nor a danger to society in any way. Obviously, this will take some work on my part, to which I will dedicate myself to, as it is a means of improvement for me. In conclusion, I would gratefully appreciate the opportunities facilitated by reinstatement, along with the amended terms and conditions. I will be appreciative of the chance to return to working towards my goals, reconnecting with family, acquiring my associate's degree in business, and successfully being released from parole. I cannot promise that there won't be any more bumps in the road. Life is inherently a struggle, more so for some than others, but I will do my best to lean on the leadership and guidance that my parole officer is there to provide with my transition from incarceration to release from ACDOC, even if it is so I can at least just start my term of probation. Thank you.
Thank you so very much, sir. At this time, the board is preparing to go into discussion. We're going to ask that you remain quiet and everyone else who's on the phone and in this room. May sound like we're talking to you, but we're not. It's just the five of us talking among ourselves. At this time, as I've stated before, the board will make its determination whether to revoke community supervision or to continue on community supervision with or without amended conditions. We're going to ask that each of us would be professional in terms of our discussion. And following this discussion, the board will vote in keeping with the open meeting law. We will vote publicly. We will not go back into a closet, go into a room. We will vote right here. So now the board is in discussion. May I have a board member who would lead off the discussion?
Dr. Wright.
Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson.
I'm going to say that as far as the warrant goes, and, you know, there's an old saying, you know, the more you talk, the more you can get yourself in trouble. You know, apparently, you know, I don't know if he contacted his PO when he had police contact on two separate occasions, or he didn't contact his PO on those two separate occasions. And the other incidents that are involved in the warrant, and this is just my own personal feeling on this, is that we have a hearing, and the hearing is conducted in two phases. In phase one, we conduct a hearing to determine whether the terms and conditions of his community supervision has been violated. We then make a determination after that phase one hearing that the terms and conditions of their community supervision have been violated. Then we go to phase two to make a determination whether they revoke or reinstate them on their community supervision. And I am also concerned about the due process, because I think in due process, you know, in phase one, they have an opportunity to respond to what those allegations are that are alleged against them. We read those allegations out there in a warrant. There are sanctions and other things that the parole officer has the discretion to do, whether the parole officer makes the determination whether what happened leads to the point of whether they want to violate them on that and list that as an allegation. That is certainly the parole officer's decision, but I do think that, you know, there is some stuff in there about him not contacting his child, which he did and which he admitted to actually doing, and the hacker's knife, I mean, they don't call it a knife, too, that's actually there, was in a case. I don't even know what a Frisker's compact clearing hook would actually do, but it sounds as though it's a tool that would be used for something similar to what he said he purchased it to be used for. It was in a case. The case was enclosed. It was in the back rear passenger seat of a vehicle inside of the actual pocket there. I'm not sure. That is could be determined to be in an arm's reach, but there were other tools that were actually located. He had a reason for his tools actually being in the back seat of his car. He doesn't have any that I recall any violent offenses that he actually had. It was, and even the parole officer said that they didn't just call it a weapon, but they took it to their own people who stated that he could possibly be charged with a felony. Not that he wouldn't be charged with a felony for having that back there in his possession. As far as the two violations for missing his UAs, he did take the UAs after that and was negative on all his UAs. So I'm still of the same opinion that I'm in favor of reinstating Mr. Routh back on his community supervision, with the exception that, and with the understanding that there are other indications in here, but, you know, the allegation that's listed on there that we addressed, that, as you have stated several times, we have found him guilty of violating his parole on the allegations listed on the warrant. And I'm just addressing those issues that are listed on the warrant, and based on those allegations, I'm still in favor of reinstating Mr. Routh on his community supervision.
Thank you, Honorable Mr. Johnson. Honorable Mr. Kiwanis.
Thank you, Mr. Board Chairman. I want to state, because I did hear this case, the majority of it, the first time I was not eligible to vote because I had left the room for a while, but I still heard the majority of the case, and it hasn't changed my position fundamentally either. I just wasn't able to vote. And, you know, this is, I believe, the importance of the discussion. You know, we look at these cases from different filters as independent voting members, and I think it speaks to the integrity of the board, just how independently we look at it. What I'm gathering is that these allegations on the phase one of the warrant were a part of a pattern of pushing the boundaries and violating his conditions. And I recognize that the parole officers have a lot of discretion. They give a lot of opportunities. And I think that this was, I don't want to say the final straw, but certainly I see that pattern in the discretion leading up to violating an inmate. So in this case, I'm not in favor of returning him to community supervision because of what I see as a totality of a pattern of pushing the boundaries of the conditions of supervision and violating those conditions. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Mr. Kamanis. Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. I also have gone back to the conditions themselves and read the conditions. And one condition F, I will not view, purchase, or possess any pornography, sexually stimulating material products, nor enter any adult establishment of any kind. And yet Mr. Roth admitted, had the images of scantily clothed women on his phone, that would be viewed as sexually stimulating material, and yet he had signed a condition that he would not do that. There's another one. He will not be alone or have any form of contact with any, capitalized, with anyone under the age of 18 without a parent or guardian present and without prior authorization from supervising parole officer. And yet, on this warrant, he self-admitted to having contact with his minor children via telephone and FaceTime, as he reports he didn't think that was contact, because it wasn't face-to-face contact. How did Mr. Quinones put it? Pushing the envelope or pushing the boundaries? Pushing the boundaries. That's what I see that as, is how much can I get? And I'm just not in favor of returning someone who, it appears, is trying to manipulate things so that they go the way he wants them. So I would also not be in favor of returning to community supervision.
Thank you. Honorable Mr. Neal.
Well, I'm trying to make this thing go on and on, but the idea that it could be a weapon, that it could be construed as a concealed weapon in a police spot, that it could be, but it could also be used as a life-saving instrument in the right hands. But based on that, you have to look at the law and what is considered a dangerous instrument. And in the law, it's considered a dangerous instrument if it is used improperly, just like a motor vehicle. A car is classified as a dangerous instrument under the Arizona Revised Statutes, but only if it is used improperly, like by a drunk driver to kill somebody. Then it's a dangerous instrument. You can run somebody down with your car intentionally and it becomes an aggravated assault rather than a traffic accident because it's a dangerous instrument in that case. This pruning tool. And you could, somebody running through Times Square swinging that thing could surely have a dangerous instrument. But in my training in law enforcement, it depends on the circumstance. He doesn't have a violent history. If he had a violent history at all, then I'd say, there's no question about it. Then it's more than likely there for that reason. But being a maintenance man, as stated in the warrant and the follow-ups, I did years of maintenance work, and I have all kinds of tools I had in my vehicles all the time that could be dangerous instruments if used improperly. So, but that being said, I would be more than willing to considering for reinstatement as community supervision. And even the parole officer said if it wasn't for the knife, he wouldn't have revoked him or violated him on the rest of the allegations. But the issue, there's a lot of issues here that are based on a judgment call. And what is considered scantily clothed woman? Think of what country you're in. what is sexually stimulating depends on your upbringing. You know, there are people in this world who get sexually stimulated. A woman is fully clothed but doesn't have a headscarf. You know, all that. My point being is that a lot of the things that we're going back on, or you're being gone back on, to show this pattern of pushing the limits and everything, I can understand some of them. I don't agree that he should have anything pornographic or, you know, technically sexually stimulating on his phone because of the, you know, the sex offender status. But some of the issues are, he's been sanctioned. He's been told the pictures. He was told to erase them. He could have been violating over that one issue. And as a sex offender, that should be a major issue. So I'm assuming that the PO that was involved, POs involved in that, thought that him erasing them would be sufficient for that violation. And it's probably because the pictures were questionable as whether they hold up in any due process as far as fitting the qualifications for, you know, for violation of the conditions. And, you know, yes, he did miss the UA, and he had the knife, you know, in there. So, you know, I can see that didn't violate, and we can, you know, we voted to, they violated the terms and conditions of his norm. But I was led to believe in my training that the terms and conditions that he's violating are the ones that are specifically addressed in the warrant, not all the rest of them that he may have done 5 years ago, accidentally missing UA or anything else like that. So anyway, I would be in favor of returning him to community supervision based on that information, but I'm just one voting member of the board.
Thank you so very much, Mr. Neal. Honorable Mr. Johnson?
I just want to just say one other thing with Mr. Neal. I mean, the parole officer said that had it not been for this knife, he would not have violated him. And we're, as the board, looking at some conditions that surely that if we look at the allegation, there were some allegations that by the letter of the conditions were violated. However, the parole officer himself said had it not been for the knife, he wouldn't have violated him. And we're going to use those same conditions to violate him. I just think that, you know, there's a due process. I think we're going beyond that reach. That's just my, with the allegations that he's listed on, but we're going beyond that, even beyond, that's it for me.
Thank you so very much. Any further discussion by board members? Here no further discussion, and I'm going to offer a motion. My motion is going to be based upon, during the initial hearing, and that is a move to revoke community supervision based upon the fact that he violated terms and conditions of his supervision. He was delinquent, and as was stated by board member Ms. Rittenhouse, the conditions that he did that were signed. And I think that deal with, I believe, number, I will not possess any type of smartphone computer, either tablet device without the permission from the town parole officer, as well as that, as well as B. I will not have any contact with anyone under the age of 18 under any circumstances, and that was signed by Mr. Ross on July 19, 2017. Therefore, that is my motion to revoke the reason for the motion.
Second.
Agree.
Disagree.
By myself, seconded by Ms. Rittenhouse, agreed by Mr. Kiwanis, disagreed by Mr. Johnson, and disagreed by Mr. Neal. Therefore, your community supervision has been revoked, sir. However, you are scheduled to be released on December, I believe this is 19th. 2018. Thank you so very much, sir, and your hearing is over. Thanks to your sister, thank you to the Department of Corrections for being in the room. Thank you. Our hearing is over. Thank you.